For several decades, the Stephen Foster Memorial in White Springs offered an Independence Day festival that featured live music, dances, games, and food. The festivities took on added significance for the memorial as it was also the birthday of songwriter Stephen Foster, the author of Florida's state song, Old Folks at Home. While few recordings of these early celebrations survive, the State Archives of Florida is thrilled to present for your enjoyment the following 4th of July program from 1964. Running a little over an hour, it was captured on reel-to-reel tape by Memorial Curator Foster Barnes. The program offers listeners unique insight into the nature of patriotism in mid-20th century America, as well as providing some good old-fashioned singing and storytelling, free watermelon, home-style fixings, and a mess of wholesome fun. So draw yourself a cold glass of sweet tea, find yourself a seat, and celebrate an old-time Independence Day with Cousin Thelma Bolton and friends way down in White Springs, Florida.
I'm sorry that, in a way, the heavy dew ran us inside, but I think maybe we're cozier and more comfortable. And certainly it is appropriate for us to be in this beautiful bell tower to pay tribute to Independence Day and Stephen Foster's birthday. And I can't think of a better way to begin it than by introducing the Big Bend musicians, Dr. John Green, Fred Jones, Claude Biedenbaugh, and Uncle Frank Noble. And it's a wonderful thing that folk musicians don't have to practice ahead of time much. They can just get together and make music. And they're going to begin with three Stephen Foster. Dr. Green.
I'd like to call the attention of the audience to the Uncle Frank Noble here and the banjo which he had in his hands, which he made. He's playing a homemade banjo. An excellent job. And Uncle Frank is 85 years old. We ought to give him a hand. Susanna, Campdown Races, an old Kentucky home, and we hadn't rehearsed until just 3 minutes ago.
Thank you.
These four men represent the Suwannee Valley area. I think it's interesting that Dr. John Green grew up between Branford and O'Brien, he said. And I know Uncle Frank's been here a year or more. He too lives in this area. And this Mr. Beanball, called Beanball, came, I'm sure his people came from South Carolina long before the Civil War. And some of his people, I'm sure, helped establish the oldest Lutheran church in the area, just south of Lake City. And it's fine that they can play together. And Fred, you come from Monticello? From Monticello, one of the Jones boys. And now from South Florida comes a fine composer, musician, Mrs. Indy Wainwright, who will first play and sing Suwannee River for us. Do you want us to sing with you? And then she's going to do a patriotic and original patriotic medley for us. Mrs. Indy Wainwright, one of our great composers.
Thank you.
Mrs. Douglas Epperson of Lake City, who was scheduled to be on the program this afternoon, is ill and couldn't come. But she sent a very fine emissary, her daughter, Cheryl Epperson, who was to be her accompanist, will appear in her place. And it is with real pleasure that I present her talented, one of her talented daughters, Cheryl Epperson. And I'll let her announce her own comment. Memorial Association, who helped bring this beautiful Carolyn Tower into being. Mr. O.K. Holmes, Lake City.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are mighty happy to have you all here to take part in this 4th of July program today. And I feel honored at having a part in it by presenting our speaker, who is well qualified. He has a BS degree from the University of Florida, and he has also holds an LLB degree from Stetson University in St. Petersburg. He is a former mayor of White Springs, Florida. He is a county judge in Hamilton County, and he's a former member of the president of the Hamilton County Chamber of Commerce, and at present, he is a member of the board of directors there. Also, he's president of the Folks Guild, Stephen Foster Memorial. Senator John McCormick, our speaker for the day.
Thank you for those kind words. I do remember the days when we had nothing but a vacant area where we are now sitting. I remember when we turned the first shovel full of dirt here for this memorial. I still have a picture of the day they unloaded the bales. I was just thinking about that as you were talking, okay. The day they unloaded the great bales, you were here. And so we have come a long way with our memorial. I think the weather points up something that we need a bit more. And that, of course, is something we have been looking forward to for a long time, and that is our auditorium. This area where we are meeting now was not designed for an auditorium, never intended to be used for auditorium purposes. And thus it is difficult for those of you in the rear to see. The seats are not designed for long time sitting, and I assure you I will keep that in mind as I talk. But I hope that you will work with us toward our program that we have that will lead up to our very beautiful auditorium and museum, which will be situated, I think, as I recall on our plan, in an L shape from the museum building to the tower and back to the river. I think that is our L-shaped plan. So I hope in a few years that we will be able to meet in a bit more comfortable surroundings than we are in this building where we are blocked off by these big columns. Of course, you may wonder, I was right here when they built this, and of course these columns are necessary. You can't take these out because all of this 200 feet of tower up above would come down on us then. They serve a very definite purpose. Let's get to the subject, though. The matter of the day here. The making of a patriotic talk by an American is pretty much like kissing. You don't have to be particularly good at it to enjoy it. You can pretty well do it off the cuff, can't you? But I thought it might be well that we reflect upon the importance of this day and the real meaning that it should have for us. Our concept of the 4th of July may have slipped somewhat to the position that one of our religious leaders recently said about the Sabbath. He said that our grandfathers used the phrase Holy Sabbath. Our fathers used the word the Sabbath. We of our generation normally say Sunday, and it appears that if the things travel on the way they're going, the next generation will simply say the weekend. And thus we see in the passing of time, unfortunately in religion, and in our patriotism, we lose sight of some of the things that are so precious to us and should not fade away from our memory and alas from existence. We have come to the point where we simply say the 4th of July. We have reduced it almost to a number. And goodness knows we have enough numbers to remember now, with zip codes, social security numbers, your post office box combination, your telephone numbers, and some days you can't remember the right number. Maybe that's something that's part of our growing society to reduce things to numbers. But of course the correct name is Independence Day. Our Jasper News carried that as a banner headlines this week. I was glad to see that. Independence Day. July the 4th, 1776, of course, is the established date of the signing of the Declaration of Independence by the members of the Continental Congress. It was assembled there at the State House in Philadelphia. The event of Independence Day was first celebrated on July the 8th in 1776, when the Declaration of Independence was read to the crowds assembled outside of the State House. That night, there were bonfires, ringing of bells, and other demonstrations of joy. Each reoccurring July the 4th was observed as our Independence Day. And so it has been that this day has been set aside as a legal holiday in every state of our nation. Thus, we pause to celebrate a birthday, the birthday of a nation, just as we pause to celebrate the birthday of a member of our family, a friend, or a loved one. We pause once each year to celebrate the birthday of our nation. And we here who are so closely tied in with our memorial and our great love for Stephen Foster and his songs and all of the period, the historical period that we try to recreate and go back to and to reestablish historically. We pause to celebrate also the birthday of Stephen Foster because he was born on the 4th of July in 1826, I believe, if my memory is right. Is it right?
Right.
July the 4th, 1826. I think if you'll count your fingers, I believe that will be about 50 years, I believe, after 1776. So you see that Stephen Foster grew up in what we might call a trying time. This was a new nation, you see. He died in 1864, lived a short life. But you can see that he lived in a trying period of time, a time much like we are living in this day and age, a time of crisis, a time of change. This was a new nation, stumbling along and starting. And of course, his songs reflect this movement. Certainly we think of Old Susanna. That was the song of the West, going to the West. We symbolize that with the settlement of the West. Thus, we have a dual purpose here at the memorial to pause and commemorate the 4th of July, the birth of our nation and the birthday of Stephen Foster. And we must remember that the beginning of our nation was just as precarious as the beginning of life for a newly born infant. As an infant is weak, so was this nation weak compared to the other nations of the world at that time. As an infant is vulnerable to disease and illness, so were we, as an infant nation, vulnerable to political disease and illness. And so this comparison can be carried out. But I think we do well when we set aside a few moments of our busy days, our busy schedule of life that we have now, to pause upon the beginning of this nation. Shortly after the declaration was prepared, but I think a few moments before it was signed, this, of course, may not be historically correct because we're down dealing with a matter of a few minutes. But Daniel Webster did speak these words, which were recorded for us. Whatever may be our fate, be assured that this declaration will stand. Through the thick gloom of the present, I see the brightness of the future as the sun in heaven. We shall make this a glorious and immortal day. When we are in our graves, our children will honor it. They will celebrate it with thanksgiving, with festivity, with bonfires and illuminations. On its annual return, they will shed tears, copious, gushing tears, not of subjection and slavery, not of agony and distress, but of exaltation, gratitude, and joy. Sir, before God, I believe the hour is come. My judgment approves this measure, and my whole heart is in it. All that I have and all that I am, and and all that I hope in this life, I am now ready here to stake upon it. And I leave off as I began, that live or die, survive or perish, I am for the Declaration. It is my living sentiment, and by the blessing of God, it shall be my dying sentiment. Thus we see the meaning attributed to the Declaration by Daniel Webster. Now these words, liberty, independence, and freedom, are all words that are easy to use on a pleasant, quiet day like this in the sanctity of the memorial. But these words in action mean, unfortunately, a great deal of hardship and hard work for those who have brought us this far in our nation. These words mean a great deal more to the men who crawled up Mount Subiaco on Iwo Jima, planted the flag, which has now come to be a great memorial at our nation's capital. These words mean more to those of you men who may have been under enemy gunfire, may unfortunately have picked up some of the bullets. These words mean more to you than simply the quiet waving of the flag on a pleasant Saturday afternoon. It's pretty much like faith. Some years ago, a particular performer announced that he would walk across Niagara Falls on a tight wire. The appointed day come, great crowds were spread out in all directions. He climbed up the tower there, looked out across the crowd and addressed the crowd for a few moments. And he said, it's been advertised that I'm going to walk across the falls on the wire. He said, how many of you have faith and confidence in me that I'll make it? And a sea of hands went into the air. He said, I do appreciate that so much. He said, I'm going to do something more than that, though. He said, I'm going to push a wheelbarrow across the wire as I go across. And a great cheer rang out. He said, how many of you think I'll make it? A sea of hands went in the air. He said, let me tell you something else, though. He said, I'm going to do more than just push a wheelbarrow. He says, as I push that wheelbarrow across this tight wire, there's going to be a man riding in that wheelbarrow. And a great cheer rang up. He said, how many of you have faith in me that I'm going to make it across there? And a sea of hands went in the air. He says, I do appreciate your confidence in me a great deal. He said, now if one of you gentlemen will just climb on up here in the tower and get in the wheelbarrow, now we'll get started. And of course, there were no takers for him on that. Everybody had confidence that the old boy would make it until it come time for John to climb up there and get in the wheelbarrow. Thus, we see quite a bit of an analogy there between freedom, liberty, independence, these fancy words, and the old get out and do that you men who have, as I say, been under enemy gunfire know what freedom, independence, and liberty means. These words mean much more to us than simply a waving of the flag on a quiet Saturday afternoon. I thought maybe as something of a little different do here this afternoon, something a little bit different than tongue wagging, I might go over the Declaration with us a little bit. Some of you might not have remembered it since you recited the 18th of April in 75 and Paul Revere rode away when you were in school. That reminded me of the story about the little Johnny. The teacher was having a little trouble with Johnny there in school. She said, Johnny said, who signed the Declaration of Independence? He said, I don't know and I don't care. And she sent a note home to his father, come to school next day, but to remain outside the door so he could hear what was going on, not be in the room. So the next day she saw the father outside the door. She again asked Johnny the question. She said, Johnny, she said, who signed the Declaration of Independence? He said, I don't know and I don't care. And his father rushed in, he grabbed him by the arm, he shook him, he said, Johnny, now that's no way to talk to that lady. He said, now, if you wrote your name on that thing, you tell her you did. You've got to confess to it now. But I thought it might be well that we look back over these words. I had a small printed one somewhere, but this was the smallest one. I knew I had this one. I keep this one on the wall. I took it out of the frame so I could roll it up and not bring it here as a picture. But as I read these words, I want you to keep in mind some words here. I know we've had a great deal of thought lately about the aspect of prayer in relation to our government. One of our great religious leaders, Cardinal Gibbons, made this statement. And as I read this declaration, I want you to notice how these words come up through the declaration. Cardinal Gibbons said, the Declaration of Independence is one of the most solemn and memorable professions of political faith that ever emanated from the leading minds of our country. A devout recognition of God and of His overruling providence pervades the momentous document from beginning to end. God's holy name greets us in the opening paragraph and is piously invoked in the last sentence of the Declaration. And thus it is, at the same time, the cornerstone and keystone of this great monument of freedom. So let me read here for a little bit. I don't think it won't take but a minute. It'll refresh something in our minds that we may not have thought about since we were in grammar school, let us say. And I'm reading from a photolithograph copy, which is a photocopy of the original. It's written in impeccable English, as we recall. But Thomas, of course, had the same failing that some of us have, his penmanship. His English was good, but his penmanship tended to scribble off there a little bit, and a word or two is a little bit hard to uncover. But let's look at this and see if we can just refresh our recollection and our memories of what this document means to us. In Congress, July the 4th, 1776, the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to separate. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organization as its powers in such form, as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experiments have shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils than they There again, Thomas messes us up a little bit. Disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter this former system of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of unrepeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused to absent to law the most wholesome and necessity for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pay other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless these people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inalienable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his meanings. He has dissolved representative houses unrepeatedly for opening for many families his invasion of the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time after such dissolutions to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers incapable of annexation have returned to the people at large for their service. The state unanimously in the meantime exposed to all damages of invasion from without and convulsions within. And so on, we see on down through the instrument there how the king is set forth as having usurped certain powers on our government. However, let's skip on down now to the last few lines. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for relief in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Not have we been wanting in attention to our British brothers. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to contend an unwarranted jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our immigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conveyed them by the ties of our common kindred to dissolve these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They too have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must therefore acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. We therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do, in the name, by the authority of the good people of these colonies, formally publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right, ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states they have full power by war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. Now listen to this last sentence. This is a good one for us to remember. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And then they signed, of course, and John Hancock made himself famous by signing bigger than anybody else. But that last sentence is important to us, I think, as Cardinal Gibbons pointed out. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And this, of course, was indeed a document to which these men were placing their lives at stake. They were breaking the tie with Great Britain. They were placing this nation on an equal with other powers, which at that time were mighty powers of the world. As I said at the outset, we began a weak nation as an infant compared to the other nations of that day. And thus these men, the signers of this declaration, faced a great challenge before them. And we know that they met that challenge, as we of this day and age have upon us certain burdens and challenges to meet. And thus we see how at the outset our nation began, this is it, the Declaration of Independence, on through the Constitution and the other documents which support our government. Those were later to come. But these things, this is the beginning we're talking about. Simply the guts of these men to start a new nation, their determination and their drive, is something that we should reflect upon.
Thank you very much, Judge McCormick, for reading aloud to us, and I'm sure it's the first time many of us have heard it in a long time, our own Declaration of Independence, and for your fine address. It's appropriate that Mrs. Wainwright will at this time play a medley of patriotic airs for us, and if she plays something that we know, let's feel free to sing right along with her.
Yankee Doodle, keep it up. Yankee Doodle, dandy. Mind the music and the steps, and with the girls be handy. And there was General Washington riding a big white stallion and giving orders to his men. I'll bet there were a million. Yankee Doodle, keep it up. Yankee Doodle, dandy. Mind the music and the steps, and with the girls be handy. I wish I were in the land of cotton. Old times fell, I'm not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. In Dixieland, where I was born, early on a frosty morning. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. Now wish I was in Dixie.
Musician who has never appeared here before, but we hope that he will in the future appear many times. It's a pleasure to present Preston Pursley of Lake City, who will sing Pretty Mary, accompanied by Cheryl Epperson.
This is an old folk tune that is recorded by Peter Paul and Murray.
Too terribly used to singing by myself. I usually sing with a group. Dr. Green asked me to do Mule Skinner Blues, so I guess I will.
Good morning, son. Ooh. on a mule skinner.
Up every state in our great union. Mr. Beanball doesn't know that I'm going to ask him to come up and improvise a little bit. Many, many times in the wagon trains that came south, went west, there was only the fiddle. And he was an important fellow. He led the service on Sunday, and every night he helped the group relax by making the feet pat and the dancers get up and dance. Will you come up and play for us?
We could use them up here.
Well, all right. They'll come up and back you up in just a little bit. You all ease around. But I just thought you'd like to hear him, because I know he's a fine fiddler. Let's give him a hand.
Thank you. Are they coming? I don't hear. Well, since they're not going to show up right now, I have one, Miss Bolin, that I kind of made up myself. Several years ago, there's Roy Acuff was down here, and he had a boy with him named Tommy Magnus. And Tommy had a tune, a new one, and he called The Death of Kilroy. And so he played it a few times, and I thought I had it. And he went back to the Grand Ole Opry, and a couple of weeks later, I heard him play it, and I had missed it altogether. I had something else. So I just called mine the Swanee River Ripple. So it goes something like this. You see how sorry a fiddle sounds without anything to drown it out. Oh, that just, if I may, Miss Bolin, I'd like to say that that's just a slight bit of what you might hear each Saturday night over at the Swanee River Jamboree, which I now ramrod, you might say. To. We don't want you to come over that night, because I think Miss Bolin has a program here tonight. But
no, we don't.
You don't? Well, we we don't like to, we're being taped, I guess, but that'll give us that much more advertisement. We have a real good country show over there, just good and clean, like you've been here today. And I hope that the Presley boy, I've invited him to come over. He was here singing a few minutes ago. I'd heard him one day down in the store, and I hope that he'll come over and be with us before long. Now, if y'all can stand any more of this, I'm going to change the tuning. This is old-fashioned fiddle tuning. say, hillbilly musicians spend three-fourths of the time tuning anyhow. So. This is a little one called Black Mountain Rag. I hope you know what I'm recognize. Doctor says, old man, said, you sure do look bad. You better take something. Partied all right here on the street, then took him a great big automobile. We got in that bus eye thing, you know, going about 5 miles a minute. Oh, he knowed how to drive it, but he didn't know how to stop it. We caught a bus up from the road down there, you know, one road went one way and one another. Great big oak standing right in the forks. Oh, he's going fast, couldn't turn neither way. Woo, that car hit that tree so hard it stopped dead still. Me and Paul did, we kept going. Rector Paul looked over at me then, he says, son, he says, you reckon the Lord's with us? I said, I don't know, Pa, if he is, he's going him some. After that wreck, Pa, he had a cork leg. Oh, I got the biggest kick seeing him going around on that cork leg, you know. Mostly I got a kick out of that cork leg. We were up on a mountain of bear hunting one day. We found a bear, all right. It's Paw and a bear. Nip and tuck, Paw and that bear. Bear he nipped, Paw he tuck. I run on fast, good, the shortest way. I said, Ma, you better open up the door, Paw. He's coming home. He liable to be bringing a bear. By that time, old man stuck his head out in the loft up there. Said, son, he says, what in the world delayed you? Paw, he run so fast, he wore that cork leg down the bottle stopper. Paw, I run fast. Paw, he's got the fast little dog, Jerry Red Tiller. They look like parts can't tell them alike. They got an old hog out here the other day. You know, one he'd get ahead, another he'd get ahead. Reckon both of them got ahead. I was going out to Texas the other day on the train, and a pretty girl sat up there ahead of me, and I wanted to meet her, but didn't know how to go about it. Directly I walked up there, I said, lady, I'm a traveling salesman from Lake City, Florida. Could you tell me what time it is? She ain't said a word. Directly I seen one of these old long-haired jackasses out across the field there, you know. I walked up there, I said, lady, I'm that traveling salesman from Lake City, Florida. Could you tell me what that resembles out there with you? Oh, she was full of conversation. Yeah, she said it looked like another one of them traveling sales from Lake City to her. Oh, that's another score for the opposite sex, you know, boys. Oh, I got your fat gal, your full gal, your slim gal, your medium sized gal. Oh, I got one of the prettiest little gal you ever saw. She'll weigh for 450 pounds. I called her Tiny for short. She's got the cutest little camel feet. Reason I called them camel feet, they go so long without water. Went over to see her the other night, about 8 o'clock, went in the back door and come out the front. There she sat right flat on the floor with a big rocking chair under her. Next she told me I would go out to the plum orchard and get some pears. Actually, I didn't give her a bit or not. And I climbed up a banana tree and commenced shaking out apples. My foot slipped and I fell right straddle up a barbed wire fence. Both feet on the same side. Come out of her shirt on all four backs. Oh, we had a fair here in Lake City last fall, you know, getting time for them again. Oh, we had that carnival with it, you know, where they have all them little entertainment places. Me and Jim Brock. Jim, are you here? Jim Brock back that day, and Doc Green was with us. We'd had a big time. Oh, they had to go around them little sideshows, fellas, you know. You go around them little sideshows. You can find anything. Reckon we'd come to a place that had a big old billy goat up on the stage, you know. Oh, he was good and mad. He was really fuming up the place. They paid $5 to see if we'd stay in an airtight room with him longest. Doc, he likes that green stuff, you know, so he went running in there to get that dog. He stayed about a minute and a half, and here he come out. Too much gas. Back to Jim back there, you know, he went in and he stayed about a minute and a half. Here comes the go down. Too much gas. Thank you.
Frank Nogle, the 85-year-old banjo picker with the homemade banjo, is going to do a number called Where Was Peter When the Church Fell Down?
Okay, Uncle Frank.
Hats off. The flag is passing by.